The sabar drum is leaning against the wall of my guesthouse room, and every time I walk past it, I think about the Maison de la culture and the promise I made to myself to actually learn a rhythm, not just tap along. But today, the drum will have to wait. Today is about a different kind of movement, the kind that gets you from one meeting to another, from one neighborhood to the next. It's the day I finally face Dakar's transit system head-on, and maybe, just maybe, find a place to call home. You see, the city is waking up again after the Grand Magal. For a few days, it felt like everyone had gone to Touba, like Dakar was holding its breath. Now, people are streaming back, and the streets are filling with that familiar, chaotic life. And with the city coming back to life, I realized I couldn't live in a guest house forever. I needed to find a flat. So, with my CIE recipes safely in my bag, I stepped out into the humid morning air, ready to tackle the first challenge, the buses. Everyone told me the same thing. Take the Dakar Demdik bus, it's the official one. But they also all made a face, a slight hesitation, as if to say, well, it's an experience. I decided to start at the plateau near my hotel and just see where the day took me. I passed a shiny BRT station, one of those new electric buses. The contrast with the old, painted car rapides that still rumble by is stark. The new and the ancient, side by side, both very Dakar. I hopped on a Dakar Demdik bus that was heading towards the Medina. It was cheaper than a taxi, about 300 francs, and I had the conductor's attention immediately. Nanga def, he asked with a grin. I stumbled through my Wolof, saying I was fine and looking for a place to live. He laughed, a big, warm laugh that filled the bus, and he told me to get off near the Tyline Market, that there would be people who could help. He was pointing me towards the heart of things, as if finding a home was a matter of being in the right place at the right time. The Medina is a different world from the plateau's wide, French colonial boulevards. It's dense, it's loud, and it smells of spices, fish, and heat. I wandered past the Grande Mosquée, its tall minaret a constant landmark, and got lost in the narrow streets, past the textile shops and the tiny tea stalls where old men argue over the football scores. It was wonderful, but it wasn't where I was going to find a modern apartment. I needed to head to one of the newer, less central neighborhoods. So I did what any sensible person does. I negotiated a taxi ride. The yellow taxis are a constant in Dakar, a sea of them honking and weaving through traffic. I haggled for a ride to Grandiaf, one of the big residential areas I'd heard had reasonable rents. The driver quoted me a price that seemed high, but after a bit of back and forth, we settled on something that felt fair, about 1,500 francs for the trip. He was a chatty guy named Musa, and he told me about his family, his village up north, and how the new oil money was changing everything, though not always for the better. Prices go up, he said, but the roads? Still the same. Grandiaf is a sea of houses, markets, and garages, a working-class neighborhood that feels alive in a way the tourist hotels don't. My plan was simple: find a real estate agent or ask around at cafes and see what was available. I stopped at a small cafe, the kind with plastic chairs and strong coffee, and ordered a Café Touba, the spiced coffee that's a Senegalese staple. It cost about 500 francs. I asked the owner if he knew of any apartments for rent. He gave me a number on a napkin and a name, Monsieur Diallo. Monsieur Diallo was a man on a mission. He led me through Grandiaf's sandy streets, past a tailor working on a sewing machine, past a group of kids playing football with a deflated ball, until we stopped in front of a small, two-story building. The flat was simple: a bedroom, a small sitting room, and a tiny kitchen. There was a water heater, a real luxury, and a balcony that looked out over the street. The rent, he said, was 175,000 francs a month. Now, that's about $290, and it felt steep for the size, but I knew the car prices were high. I asked him about the power situation, remembering the advice about generators. Ma'am, there's a Jenny in the building, he said, pointing to a rusty box tucked away in the corner of the courtyard. I decided to look at one more place in Purcell's Assanies, just to compare. Parcells Assanis is another vast, grid-planned neighborhood, and the flat there was a bit bigger, but it felt further from everything. The rent was a bit lower, around 150,000 francs, but it lacked the balcony, and the building had no generator. In the heat of the hibernage, when the power goes out, that's a big deal. The decision weighed on me as I rode a car rapide back towards the center, clinging to the roof rack with a few other passengers, the wind in my hair. It wasn't a democratic way to travel, but it was an adventure. I got back to the plateau, my head full of figures and options. I needed a break. I wandered into the IFEAN Museum of African Arts, just to get out of the sun for an hour. The entrance fee was a few hundred francs, and the air inside was cool and quiet. I stood in front of a collection of masks for a long time, thinking about the heritage of this place, so deep and so present. Afterwards, I found a bench at a cafe terrace nearby, ordered a gazelle beer, and just watched the city go by. The cost, about 1,500 francs for the beer, was worth it for the moment of calm. I pulled out my phone and checked the weather, still hot, still humid, a chance of evening showers. It felt right. There was one more thing I wanted to do today, a tiny step towards the settling in feeling that still eluded me. The Museum of Black Civilizations was hosting an exhibition of replica Ming Dynasty costumes paired with West African textiles. I had heard about it, and it sounded too strange and wonderful to pass up. I walked over, paid the modest entry fee, and spent an hour in a room where embroidered Chinese silk hung next to bright Senegalese basin. It was a strange, beautiful echo of a connection I hadn't considered. Seeing these two traditions side by side made me feel like I was in a city that was a genuine crossroads, not just a stopover. By the time I left, the light was turning orange and the heavy sky promised rain. I made a decision. I called Monsieur Diallo and told him I'd take the place in Grand Yaf. It wasn't perfect, but it was mine. The paperwork was simple, just a copy of my passport and the recipes from my CIE application. I paid the first month's rent in cash and got a receipt written on a piece of paper. It felt more real than any contract I'd ever signed. As the first heavy drops of rain started to fall, a familiar sound and smell, I knew I'd crossed a threshold. I wasn't just a visitor anymore. I had a key. That night, back in my guest house, I looked at the sabar drum. I hadn't learned a rhythm, but I had learned a much more complex one. I had navigated the buses, haggled with taxi drivers, seen 100 faces, and found a place to rest my head. The drum was a reminder of the music I wanted to learn, but the day itself had its own percussion, a rhythm of buses and rain, of negotiation and discovery. As I turned off the light, I could hear the city outside my window, a low hum of traffic and life. Nenga Def, Dakar. I'm settling in. Tomorrow, I'll get the keys to my flat and buy an inverter, the real key to comfort in the rainy season. The rent in Grand Yaf was about 175,000 francs, and it doesn't include the cost of a generator or the electricity bill itself, which is another couple of thousand francs a month. It's a lot, but for a base in the city, it feels right. I'll also need to budget for the bus rides to get around, which are a few hundred francs a go. For now, I'm just happy to have a place to hang my hat. I'll be here all week, exploring, learning, and trying to find the beat. Tarana has a way of finding you when you least expect it. And for now, this city is my home.